when you're in the building alongside the Stanley Cup, as Eric Dehatchuk joins us, and that's the case of the United Center. Although the weather seems to also be part of this story, Eric.
The weather is absolutely abysmal here today. It's funny, it stormed like mad this morning, cleared up for a couple of hours this afternoon, enough to time to get out to the waterfront to run, and then we were all riding over on the bus around 5 o'clock, and it was just pouring rain. There's funnel clouds reported out at Midway. There's lightning in the air. It is scary outside. It is a very frightening thing. In fact, I ran into the commissioner, the deputy commissioner, and Don Collins about 3 o'clock, and they had trouble getting in just because so many of the flights were delayed and diverted out of O'Hare. So I remember a couple, I think it was in the 2010 playoffs, that there was a tornado warning in the building too, and they had made contingency plans as a result of that. And that's just the type of weather that you get in a place like Chicago near the lake at this time of year. It's so humid. You feel like you can cut the weather with a knife, and we're all safely inside, but I think there's an awful lot of people that are still trying to get to the arena tonight. So we'll see how it goes. But inside it, of course you're in the bowels of the arena, and there's you have to go to a door to see what's happening outside. So you're pretty much isolated once you're inside here.
The fact that, and you kind of touched on this on Friday, and I thought it was a really interesting point, and we ended with it. Let's pick it up. It's just so much different when there's a cup in the building, right? That there's a finality. You can see the finish line.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's like election night, you have an election and then finally you are waiting to see what the result is after a long, long campaign. And for the players on both these teams, they were at training camp in the middle of September. They were skating before that. This is a long gestation period to get to this point. And for a lot of them, it may be the only time that they ever have an opportunity to win the Stanley Cup. I mean, you think about the Chicago Blackhawks. I looked it up today. If they win tonight or if they win in Game 7 on Wednesday, there'll be 7 players only that were here for all of the championships. Now, Chris Versteeg was here in 2010 and left and now has a chance to come back and win again in 2016. So that would be 8 from the 2010 team. But, it's a 30-team era. The game has never been closer. Both of these teams were very close to being eliminated at different times in the playoffs, escaped by the skin of their teeth, and they are now here. So, you could just sort of sense the anticipation is palpable. The one thing that I didn't detect anywhere is nervousness. It's mind-boggling to me how collectively calm players on both teams are. If there are nerves, they're doing a very good job of keeping them to themselves, because they just seem to be going about their business. And, I suppose you could argue that that's one of the reasons that these teams have gotten this far, that when the pressure was on, they didn't, they weren't overcome by the moment, but they were able to rise to the occasion. And that's what the history of these teams has been. I think the interesting, side story is that, neither Steven Stamkos nor Patrick Kane has had much of an offensive impact in the series. And, I was talking to Pierre LeBrun on the drive over, who's sitting beside me on the bus, and said, wouldn't it be something if Kane is shut out again tonight and if the Blackhawks actually win a championship with really a marginal contribution from a guy that you think of as a money player? It's hard to imagine that they are this close to winning a championship and have gotten so little from Patrick Kane in the first 5 games.
It's sometimes we get into that business of making mountains out of molehills, and I know that the statistic has been trotted out today. Haven't won in Chicago to win a cup since 1938. And you talked earlier about the guys that have been here for these two cups. Does that play a role for Taves? I hate to think that he gets more excited because of this. He's just a professional. This is what he does. But the chance to win at home has got to be a real unique opportunity for this group.
There's no question about it. They preface their remarks by saying all the right things, which is that, our primary goal is to win the Stanley Cup, however that is done, wherever that happens to be done. But you're right. I mean, they won the cup on the road in Philadelphia. That was that weird Patrick Kane goal that Timo Tiimonen was talking about today. And then they won 3 years later, also on the road in Boston. That was that amazing finish where it looked like it was going to come back to Chicago for Game 7, and they scored 2 goals late and turned a 1-goal deficit into a victory, essentially. And so I do think that for the guys that have been here for a long period of time, it matters. They have a history now with the fans. Even Joel Quenneville was talking about how it just feels like there's more of a buzz in the city now than even in those other runs that they've been on. So yes, I think that you're right. They would like to win the thing at home. I mean, Patrick Sharp's brother was on the flight sitting beside me on the plane yesterday, and you know, and he I don't think he can make it down to Tampa if there's a seventh game. So, you know, family and friends are marshaling, and if they happen to win at home, they'll all be on the ice. That's the way they celebrate now. You know, they let the players celebrate themselves, they award the Conn Smythe, and then they allow the families to come onto the ice. So, you know, because there's just no way with the number of guests that everybody has that they could celebrate in the dressing room anymore. And so it's become a new tradition in the NHL, and it's one that the players really embrace. And I think that it would matter a lot to the players if they could win here tonight.
You mentioned the Conn Smythe. We can also begin to have that conversation. What's your opinion on the field? Is it a wide open field or is it a pretty narrow field?
Yeah, I don't think it's narrow. I don't think it's wide open at all. I think most people have Duncan Keith first in their mind. I think most people have Jonathan Toews second in mind. I mean, remember, if there will be a vote tonight, no matter what. The vote takes place with about 10 minutes to go in the third period. They tabulate the ballots. You are allowed to specify certain contingencies in a close game. So, you know, this player first, unless, you know, situation X happened. But if it happens that Tampa is the winner in the game, those ballots are destroyed, and we re-vote on Wednesday night. So, you know, I'm pretty sure that there isn't anybody on Tampa that would win as a member of a losing team losing a game six. So it's Duncan Keith one, it's Jonathan Toews two, and then, you know, then I guess it depends on where you think. You know, do you put a Tampa Bay player third, or do you give the nod to somebody else on the team? It's challenging because it has been challenging the other years that Chicago's won, just because they are a team that's so deep. And there are a lot of years where it's not clear cut. There was, you know, a couple of years where the Chicago writers here are convinced that Corey Crawford got robbed and deserved to win the Conn Smythe ahead of Patrick Kane in 2013. So I don't think you can ever go wrong with Jonathan Toews, but I just think that the minutes that Duncan Keith has played on a depleted defense corps, you know, a couple of times in this series, he's looked a little bit worn, but for the most part, he's been terrific. We always remind readers and listeners that the Conn Smythe goes to the player who has been the most effective throughout the entire playoffs.
Right.
So, you know, you can be disqualified a little bit if you have a poor final like Patrick Kane had. But the reality is that, you know, a guy like Duncan Keith has been good for four rounds. And so I'm pretty sure that if the Blackhawks win tonight, that he will get it. Now, if it goes seven, and I think that there's going to, and especially if Tampa manages to find a way of pulling it out,
yeah,
I think there's going to be a lot of sentiment for Victor Hedman.
Yeah, well, and what a final he's had. We've talked a little bit about that. And he's one of a handful of guys that I think, Eric, have some really unique stories. And I wanted to ask you about a couple of guys with the understanding that it may or may not be over. But two guys in particular, one, Ben Bishop. I go back to that game, the mistake with Hedman, they collide, Sharp scores the goal. But he didn't allow that to kill him. He didn't. Yeah. He was able to overcome that. And who knows what happens, but I was really impressed with that. He showed me a little mental fortitude there.
Yeah, I would agree with that. You know, and I think that everybody understands that he's hobbling right now, and that if it does end tonight, you know, chances are tonight or tomorrow we'll find out what exactly this injury is. I mean, some kind of a leg problem. It's really preventing him from moving post to post. He just isn't as mobile as he likes to be. I mean, it helps that he's 6'6". And, you know, covers a lot of the net, even when he just drops down in the butterfly and puts his pads down on the ice. But I think he's been real good. You know, and then you could argue that he's been more than that based on, you know, how hobbled he has been. So I think he gives them a chance to win. I think that if they internally, Tampa would not be playing him because I think they have a lot of faith in Vasilevskiy. If they did not think that they could get a winning performance from Ben Bishop, he would not be starting. And he was at the podium today, and you know, there's, you know, I mean, we've been surprised before in this series, you know, expecting goaltender A, and suddenly it's goaltender B that comes out, but it didn't look like there was any reason to think that it wouldn't be Ben Bishop starting in goal. And for that matter, that Nikita Kucherov, who only played a handful of minutes in the game the other day after crashing into the goalpost, looks like he's good to go too. At least he did a coming out of the morning skate today.
The other guy I want to ask you about is on the Hawks side, and only because, to me, I find him a fascinating story. He was a story game one when the playoffs began because he's a healthy scratch. Now, here we are at the end, and all Antoine Vermette seems to be doing for Chicago is scoring game-winning goals. This has been an interesting ride for a guy that's going to be an unrestricted free agent here in a week or two.
Well, there's no doubt about it, Rob, and it just goes to show that, when I always refer back to when the Flames won the Stanley Cup in 1989, and the only way that you can go four rounds is if everybody chips in something at some point. So there was an awful lot made of the fact that it wasn't just for Matt, it wasn't just team and him, but an awful lot of players that traded places at the NHL trading deadline were in a similar situation. You know, Nashville wasn't starting Franzen and Santarelli. You know, a lot of teams gave up a lot of assets, including Washington for Curtis Glencross, and then these players weren't making that much of a difference. But the beauty of Chicago is that they have found a way to get past the first couple of rounds without getting a contribution from Vermette, and then he has been there to pick them up when Kane has faltered. So, a lot of people have been trying to get Vermette to talk a little bit about that, about how it was just a really difficult, tough transition for him. They play such a go-go style here in Chicago. I don't think that it was something that he was used to. I mean, he's been real good in the faceoff circle, but he was a guy that was leading the Arizona Coyotes in scoring when they made that trade. And I think that they reasonably expected that he would be able to come in and provide more offense than he did. So, you know, it took a long time. And if at any point along the way, including the third round, when they were down 3-2 to the Anaheim Ducks, if they had been eliminated at that point, you know, you could easily second guess that deal. Right now, with two game-winning goals in the Stanley Cup final, they're going to draft 29th or 30th or Arizona will with that pick. I think the Blackhawks would tell you right now that's the deal that they'd do again. And whether or not that enhances his stature as a free agent, I don't know. It's
right.
Hard for me to believe that he could be back in Chicago just because they'll have so many salary cap issues. You'd certainly have to take a short-term contract at a discounted rate to stay here. But I do think that, you know, teams are seeing him in a slightly different light than they might have a round ago.
Two questions for you to finish. One, and I'll leave it for the last on this game. One is more the circles you've been running in, the people you've been talking to. Eric, I know it's always the same way heading into the draft and free agency. There's a lot of scuttlebutt. There's a lot of names being thrown out there. What's your sense of the marketplace?
In free agency?
Well, in trades, free agency, player movement.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of chatter. I mean, there's a lot of general managers that are talking right now. Every team has its own wish list, you know. So the Calgary Flames are seeing if there's a goaltender that makes sense at a price that they believe that they can afford. Edmonton is really looking hard at the goalie market. They're looking at experienced guys. They're looking at young guys to grow with the group. I think that what we'll see, I mean, if it does end tonight, we'll have about a week and a half to lead into the draft. All the general managers are meeting in Las Vegas a week tomorrow in advance of the governor's meeting. I think there's going to be a ton of chatter, we've been wrong about this before because sometimes mm-hmm. You get all of the hype about the draft and trades leading up to it, and it takes the week between the draft and the start of free agency for those deals to actually come to fruition. But I think there'll be a lot of shuffling of the deck in the next say 3 weeks, and I think that as I say, once we put this season to bed, I think that the chatter is going to get really intense, and there'll be a lot of fun trade rumors out there because I think there's going to be some big names in play.
I hate to backtrack. Did you say the Flames are in the market for a goalie?
Yeah, I think the Flames would be interested. I mean, they're just sniffing around right now. I think of some, like Robin Lehner is one of the interesting young goaltenders that is on the market right now, and the Flames, I believe, are interested in him. I think the Oilers are interested in him. I think there's a lot of teams that are interested in him, and what I'm hearing from around the National Hockey League is that the one thing that may prevent it from happening, especially from a Calgary perspective, is that Ottawa doesn't want to do the deal that they did for Ben Bishop, which was, a Corey Connacher and a low, mid-round draft choice. And I think that they want to get more for him than that. And, Leonard's concussion history, I think, will scare off some teams. But he's an interesting piece because there was a time when Ottawa rated him ahead of Ben Bishop, and we've seen what Ben Bishop has done in the last couple of years for Tampa in terms of stabilizing that position. And he'll be the guy, I believe, that Ottawa is going to ultimately trade. And you just have to believe. Do you really like this guy? Do you like him enough to give up a tangible asset? I can't believe that somebody's going to give up a first round. And if it is, it'll be Edmonton because they have that extra one.
Back to this game tonight, a game six. You've seen a number of these elimination games. The records speak for themselves, how good Chicago is, how good Tampa is at staying alive. What do we look for early on in a game like this, Eric? What will you be watching for?
Well, I think the starts have been weird in this particular series because both teams have at different times been really good off the start, and both teams have been really, really lousy off the start. So I'll be very interested in seeing. I mean, the crowd is going to be nuts. I think, you know, just the anticipation. I think the people that are in the building probably paid a small fortune to get into the building because the Stanley Cup could potentially be awarded. So I think that Tampa's goal is going to be to try and take the crowd out of the game and play as close to the vest as they can, just to sort of, you know, stabilize everything and see if they can get the first goal. So it will be very interesting. But it's hard based on what we've seen so far to predict how it's going to start. And a lot of times what's happened is that the teams that have had the exceptional starts haven't been able to finish. I mean, Chicago the other night when they lost to Tampa, I think they had like a 17-5 edge in first period shots, and they rolled all over them, and they just couldn't get more than the one pass to past Bishop, and you know, it ended up costing them. So it's one of these series, and one of these, you know, like, it's really the most well, statistically it is the closest series in NHL history, and realistically there's no reason to not think that we're not going to see more of the same tonight.
As always, appreciate this, my friend. We will talk to you on Wednesday.
All right, thanks, Rob.